Hello, everyone. It's Friday, the 3rd of May, and welcome to episode 203 of the Kite Podcast with me, Ben Eagle.
And me, Will Evans. Contract farming is our topic today, something that you may well already be involved with in some way. But how do you start a contract dairy farming business? To find out exactly, we are joined by Andrew Jones, farm owner who entered a contract farming arrangement in East Cheshire, and making a Kite podcast debut, Kite consultant Tilly Williams. Also with us, our podcast producer Becky, and everybody's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Walkland. Chris, let's go over to you for the milk market report. Where are you this week?
Well, we're at peak milk this week, I think. So to celebrate that fact, I've put my brilliantly creative writing talents to good use and have done something I've never done before. I've written a song to celebrate. Actually, it's just the song lyrics I've written. I've not set it to music yet, so I won't be singing my song, just reading it out.
I'm sure we have had songs from you before, haven't we, Chris?
Yeah, we have.
I'm sure we have.
Well, not very good ones. This is a good one.
Okay.
A new podcast team are going to be the very first people to hear my new lyric, so I'd appreciate some honest feedback. So here goes. I'm on top of the milk production world, looking down on its creation. And the only explanation I can find is the milk that's around, something, 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 I've not thought of this bit yet, has put me on top of the milk production world. So that's the first verse. I'm going to do some more, but that's...
Hang on, Chris. Are you sure this is original? I'm sort of sensing I might have heard this before.
No. All my creative work. I'll have
you the rest of Chris's work.
Yeah.
Recycled.
I think the carpenter might be getting in touch.
Anyway, on to the report. And yes, indeed, we are at peak milk there or thereabouts. At the zenith of the flush. But as most people know, most farmers know, there hasn't really been one. Dryers that are normally rammed full of milk at this time of year aren't, and they aren't queuing up to unload either. The spot milk price is a remarkably high 34p, and before a bank holiday too, which just goes to show how short milk is. I think the latest volume figures put us about 2% down, and I reckon if we take current production and compare it with previous years, we're filling 30 to 50 fewer reload tankers every day than we normally would in a good flush. And that's 30 to 50 tankers not taking it to cheese plants or to dry it into powder to sell at the current rubbish price. So spare a thought, everyone, as to where commodity prices would be if the weather had been good and milk volumes were flying. Believe me, you would not be getting milk price increases, but happily prices are ticking up. Arla, Muller, Crediton, Parkham, Barbers, Saputo, Belton are the main movers for May and June. Several of those are in the southwest, where the Yeo Valley regenerative recruitment move with First Milk is certainly rattling some cages. On the market, there's been no GDT this week. The next one is on Tuesday, but I don't have particularly high hopes. In Europe, Dutch butter edged up a bit to 5,870 euros. And UK supplies have stayed stable, and butter is even touching or even at 5,000 sterling, which is a pretty good price for this time of year. Cream is similar to what it was at £2.10, which is okay. And in Europe, cream has recovered last week's losses and equivalent to £2.25. Dutch skim posted a minor gain, but we really need a whole lot more. Happily, though, I think the price should rise after peak. I know sellers who aren't selling now their stocks now because they think it will be higher in a month or two's time. On the futures, butter's had a pretty good week, up by an average of 80 euros to a touch under 6,100 euros. And with 6,250 euros on the board for September. So that's significantly up on current prices. Skim didn't change. So we're up a bit in a farm gate milk price equivalent, but still in the low to mid 30 pence range for those on ingredients contracts. On cheese, I'm still hearing some talk about very cheap mild kicking around on the back of good availability, and some sellers are, alas, still keen or forced to offload, which isn't helping. But the Irish are out of the market. There'll be no stocks or limited stocks because cheesemakers aren't buying spot milk. They can't afford to at 34p. And they are increasing their farm gate prices significantly. So they'll be paying 38p, probably, perhaps 40p on constituents, and the spot price is 3,400 to 3,450 sterling. Nevertheless, real market prices should be on the rise for June and July, even if the futures aren't indicating that just yet. Mozzarella is the same as it was at 3,100 sterling. So there you are. Now I'm back to my new career as a songwriter as I get to work on my second verse and my second song called simply Sweet Rebecca. But I'll save those lyrics for another day. Take it away, everyone. Goodbye.
So before you carry on with that writing of song lyrics, Chris, you might want to wait out for Neil Diamond as well. he might be in touch as well. Thank you, Chris. Andrew, let's bring you in. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Kite Podcast.
Good morning.
Can you introduce yourself to the listeners on the business?
My name is Andrew Jones. I'm 62 years old. I still call myself a dairy farmer, but I've now got a contracting farming partner. I left school when I was 16, started working on my father's farm. And when I was 20, an opportunity presented itself to go and farm with my disabled uncle. And I moved to where we are now at Middlewich and started working with him, and then eventually took over. It's a reasonably sized dairy farm. It's 450 acres, but it was on quite a few small holdings. And we were milking on two holdings and keeping young stock on other holdings. It was incredibly labour intensive. It was never going to last doing that. So we then had to centralise it all on one unit, which we're now based at Yew Tree Farm, and everything is there, but we still retain all the land that we were farming before. So that sort of really covers it, really, I think.
Funny. Yeah, no, it's a great intro. Thank you. And we'll delve more into the business as we go on. But we are talking about contract farming in general today. So Tilly, welcome to the podcast to you as well. Before we turn to contract farming, do you want to just tell the listeners a bit about you and what you do with Kite?
Morning, everybody. Yeah, so I joined Kite in November. So I'm relatively new to the Kite business, but have experience of contract farming in the past. Previously, I worked at a small consultancy, and before that, I worked for a multi-site block carver dairy farming business in Cheshire.
Cool. So contract farming, let's dive straight in. What is it?
So contract farming is a joint venture between a farmer and a contractor. The farmer provides land, buildings and fixed equipment, such as the milking parlour, a bank account, and also, well, typically the milk contract. In return for providing that, the farmer receives a basic fee and a divisible surplus, which is a split of the profits at the end of the year. The contractor provides the labour, the cows, the machinery and the day-to-day management, and in return they receive a contractor's fee, a cow hire charge and their split of the divisible surplus.
And there may be listeners who depending on their situation, they might be interested in this either as a contractor themselves or looking for a contractor. But what are some of those reasons? Why might people be looking at this as an option?
So there's a number of reasons, really. So for the farmer, it provides a relatively stable income that's potentially more lucrative than a farm business tenancy. It allows them to release the working capital on the farm. They also get to retain some of the taxation benefits, such as inheritance tax and income tax reliefs. It avoids the employment liability is another thing, and they still get to retain some involvement in the farm, but they're not responsible for the day-to-day. From a contractor's point of view, obviously the investment in the land, they don't have to take care of that. If you're already an established business, it allows you to expand. Also, from somebody that's got maybe a single unit with a really good member of staff that they don't want to lose, contract farming potentially offers a way to retain that person, where they can take that manager from that farm and put them on that unit and give them a bit more control. Obviously, if they're growing the business, then there's benefits from an economies of scale point of view. And also it is an option, you know, for new entrants as well. If they're looking to get on the farming ladder, you know, it's something they may want to consider.
You both mentioned sort of independently the structure, Andrew, of or part of the structure of your agreement and the percentages and what have you. But if somebody's listening to this, Tilly, and sat at home and thinking, do you know what? I'm in a similar position to Andrew. I've got a farm. I've got the infrastructure. I still want to be a farmer. And what, you know, whatever, my succession's not looking like I thought it would be. I want to explore this as an option. What's the sort of typical starting point? You've explained the structure, but in terms of like that profit share and management fees and what's the natural starting point that you tend to see people then create their own agreements from?
Well, it all depends on the budget, what they've come up with to start with, but typically in an arrangement where the contractor's providing the labour, the cows and the machinery, the starting point is normally around 80-20, 80 to the contractor, 20 to the farmer. There needs to be a sizable chunk of profit going to the contractor in order for them to sort of push performance. You know, you want to incentivise them to sort of maximise the profit on that farm. And obviously the benefit is for the farmer as well then, because his 20% is bigger.
Everyone's a winner.
Great. So Andrew, let's delve into some of your experience. So tell us about your experience of contract farming, but also, I suppose, what the benefits have been for you as a farm owner.
Yeah, well, we just to go back, really, we started contract farming in September of 2019, but we'd been sort of planning it for a year in advance before that, trying to find ourselves someone we thought we could do it with. And I have to say that it's all gone very smoothly since then. It's been an excellent thing. I've never regretted it for a minute. I'm still class myself as a dairy farmer. The business is still running our name. My wife still does all the pays all the bills and does all the accounts. We just don't have the day-to-day hassle of actually running the farm. So as far as I'm concerned, it's been an excellent move. We were in a slightly unusual position, perhaps to other farmers, that we were on the line of the planned HS2 route, which is going to completely destroy our farm, take the house out, split the land in half. So we had to make a decision. We have a son, but he was at university, and the conversation was along the lines of, do you want a farm? No, I don't. Don't keep it for me. I didn't particularly want to sell a farm. I don't think we could have done anyway. So we had to find another way of doing it. And our other way of doing it was to find a contract farmer. And as Tilly's alluded to, there are lots of benefits as far as inheritance tax and income tax, and also provides an income, providing you find the right contract partner. I think that's the key to it, is to do that. We spent a year doing interviewing people, and essentially that's what you do. You interview them to see whether you think they're suitable. The farming partner I took on, I sort of knew probably an awful lot about them, really, although I didn't really know them that well. If that answers all your questions.
No, it's great. I mean, did you look at any other options? For example, I'm always interested in this one as to why you didn't choose to, say, rent the farm out.
For me personally, I'm 62. I've been farming for the best part of 40 years. I wasn't really ready to kind of stop doing that. So
yeah.
Having a contract farming partner means, and we literally live down the road from it, and I don't interfere with what they do, but I like to go up there and see what they are doing. And, you know, they've been salvaging here the last few days. I like having that involvement in what they're doing. And for me, that's why we did it the way we did it, rather than yeah, I could have rented it out quite easily. And in the area where we are, there's high demand for rented land, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do. Everybody has a different set of circumstances that they work to, and that was our set of circumstances.
Yeah. And you said you did some interviews to find the right person. Can you just tell us a little bit about building that relationship and sort of how that's grown over time?
Oh, just again, to go back, we've had a consultant in all along. It was Kite, but we've had consultant. There's a consultant. There's still a consultant involved now, but we drew a sort of a short list between us of who we thought may be suitable. And then we drew a really short list after they all came out to visit the farms. And then we drew what we called the final three. So we then went and visited their farms. And essentially, in the case of the people that we ended up going into contract farming, but they had multiple sites. And I think at the time we visited three of their different farms. So I think we had a pretty good idea of how they were going to look after our farm, which was kind of an important decision as well. I didn't want the farm, you know, there were other businesses that looked like they could make lots of money, but would they leave me with a farm that was worth having at the end of it, which was kind of key for me. So it's so important to do your homework. And then gradually, once you've decided which partner you're going with, you then have I can't remember how many meetings we had with them, but we must have had half a dozen different meetings where we were going through what we were going to get out of it, what they were going to get out of it, and how it was generally going to work. So I think the most important work you do is the preparatory work for it. So I think that's kind of, hopefully that explains it.
Yeah. And just one more for me before I hand over to Will. I mean, how did it feel for you in terms of that transition? You've been on the farm for years. You've got this big change, but you've got the big change coming up. How did it feel for you?
It didn't really feel that difficult, if I was being completely honest. I mean, there are still moments even today when I think, oh, God, it'd be quite nice to be doing that. But actually, no, it wouldn't really. No, I don't. There's certain aspects of the dairy farming world that the labour side of it, I was beginning to find increasingly difficult. And so I don't miss the certain aspects of it. I don't miss at all. I don't miss the oversight that seems to be going on within the industry from your milk buyer to anybody else who wants to have a look what's going on. So I don't miss dealing with that. And the people I've gone into in who are my contracting farming partner, they have to deal with that.
Mm. Okay. Tilly, how do people usually meet who are looking for a contracting relationship? It feels like there should be an app. Swipe right for yes, swipe left for no, or something like that.
We're maybe not getting into that territory.
Contracting Tinder.
Maybe Kite should think about that, Becky. You can have that idea.
Matchmaking service.
Yeah, you can have that idea.
So there's a number of ways, really. Obviously, you can go out and just outright advertise it to everybody. By doing that, you know, you can come up against, you know, time wasters, people that don't have the ability to actually truly follow through with it. The other way of doing it is like what Andrew touched on, is basically come up with a list of people and then invite them to have a look at the farm, you know, people that are interested in potentially expanding their businesses or even a new entrant. The other way of doing it, and this works quite well for a lot of people, if somebody is farming and they have got somebody that they know, somebody that works for them, they potentially want to get them on board. You know, they've already been working with each other over, you know, a period of time. That person may not have the opportunity to buy their own farm. So potentially that's a good route in, and the makings of a good working relationship.
Okay. So what are the key factors then? Once you've found the right partner for this, what are the key factors to ensure that good working relationship?
Well, trust is obviously a big factor because, you know, there's a bank account there, number two account, and essentially 80% or whatever the arrangement of that money that sat in the farmer's bank account belongs to the contractor. You know, so trust is a fundamental part of it. Communication, I would have said, is another, you know, is key as well. And having aligned values and objectives, really, you know, making sure that everybody is trying to achieve the same thing. Like Andrew said, from his point of view, it was really important that his contractor was going to leave the farm in good condition. You know, so that's key. And I think as well, you know, it's important that there's a good level of technical and business expertise in with both the farmer and the contractor. I think that's good to make a good working partnership. You know, those two things are key because, you know, sometimes, and I'm sure in Andrew's situation, he will still have input in what goes on or some suggestions.
Yeah. So what, with all that in mind, what can you do or put in place to make sure those things run smoothly? Is it sort of simple as a written agreement or some kind of statement? How does it work?
Well, firstly, like Andrew's already touched on it, it's really important that you do due diligence on this, you know, that you get the right partner, that you go out and you see their farm and see what they're doing on a day-to-day basis. You know, if you turn up to somebody's farm and it's a bit of a mess and it's not really, you know, that's an alarm bell probably straight away. Having a robust contract, you know, in place, setting out the terms of the agreement, you know, you want it to be at least 5 years. You know, it's no point doing it if it's less than 5 years. So you need to commit to at least 5-year term. And a farm budget is also important. So, you know, make sure that there's a farm budget been devised at the start, you know, and that there's then ongoing monitoring. Another thing would be to have regular management meetings, you know, and normally involving a third party in that, you know, in case there is any conflicts. But hopefully, because you've got this good working relationship, that doesn't happen. And at those meetings, you will discuss, you know, you will be tracking the business performance financially, but also the physical performance of the business, and then make sure that is minuted as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Can I ask a question? Probably links back to the swipe left, swipe right, and I don't know which way is yes and which way is no, but you said something, Andrew, about, you know, visiting the farms and then the legacy that they were going to leave, so potentially could have gone with somebody who you thought could generate more cash, but it was about the sort of legacy of the farm and protecting, I don't know, natural resources and the infrastructure and being respectful of that. And that is a bit dating, isn't it? You know, that like there's this list of criteria of people when you go out that you're looking for, but actually there's a bit of a sweet spot when you do finally find somebody. And how important was that tip probably of value stuff? You know, somebody who farms in a way that you can, when you go up to the farm, Andrew, you're happy with the way that they're farming or the way that they're looking after the infrastructure or the things that they do and the reasons that they're doing. Where's the sort of balance of that versus the purely business profitability commercial element? A bit, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10 for you.
I think you get, it doesn't really answer your question this, but I think you get a feeling when you see their farm, you know that there is a, it's not all about profit, but it's also got to be about profit because you've got to kind of to sustain your lifestyle when you're not farming any longer. But it's also really important for me personally is that because we live amongst it all, that I didn't want to look at my farm deteriorating because I couldn't necessarily cope with that very well. But obviously, yeah, they've got to make money, haven't they, at the end of the day? And I think as long as you're happy with that and the other ones there as well, and you've got a pretty good idea if you've done your groundwork with them, that it's going to be there because they're professional farmers, aren't they, these people that generally take these multiple sites on because they're good. They're good at it. They can't be poor at it, as they wouldn't do it. So I don't know if that really 100% answers your question as a score to 1 to 10. They're both important, but you get a feeling yourself at the time whether you know, whether it's going to work for you or not with them. Tilly touched on most of the things that I was going to say, really. Trust's massive. Trust is massive. If you can't trust each other, then it'll not even last a year. And regular meetings, we have four meetings a year, and we have a mediator, which is a type consultant who's been involved in our business for an awful long time. He's also really important because he's the medium that I use and that the contract farmer's able to use to raise things that may be considered a bit difficult.
Yeah.
At a meeting, so he's crucial to the whole thing, and then have a really good agreement. Agreements, you know, have a really well drawn up agreement that's legally binding, and but trust is massive. If there's no trust, you've got no hope.
Yeah.
Does that answer any of your questions?
Well, I think I asked you really quite an intangible question, isn't it? Yeah. So it's like saying, you know, why do you love your partner, or why do you love your kids, or whatever. You know, there's lots of logic and reasoning that you can do, but you just do sort of thing. And I do think there is that little bit of, this is just somebody that I can rub alongside, and you know, and know when to agree to disagree, or know when to concede in the negotiation, and you know when on those difficult topics somebody's holding up a really hard mirror, but actually you've got to look in it because the problem is you, sort of thing, or you know, they'll have the same thing on the other side. And there's a lot in that sort of trust and humility bit, isn't there?
Sure,
definitely, 100%. I agree totally with you there. And you've also got to remember that the people who have multiple sites are generally quite good at that. It's how they've got multiple sites, isn't it? Some farmers are able to get multiple sites and other ones aren't. And some of the ones that aren't are good farmers. They're just not good at – their people skills aren't necessarily as good as other people's.
Mm.
Yeah. Tilly, do you have some examples of some businesses that have managed the contracting relationship well? I mean, you must work with several farmers who've got multiple sites and doing this.
Well, Andrew's, like he's already said, is a prime example of where contract farming's worked really well. You know, you can tell by Andrew's enthusiasm, actually, that, you know, it's sort of been changed his lifestyle, but he's more than happy with his arrangement. You know, and like you say, he's gone through the steps and done his due diligence, and, you know, has those regular meetings and they never change, they always happen. So yeah, we have a number of examples, and we have another number of examples, you know, within Kite where it works on other systems as well. You know, Andrew's farm's a block carving farm, grass-based block carving farm, which Andrew wasn't actually a grass-based block carver before when he went into this. But, you know, we have arrangements in Kite on all year round farms and high yielding farms and housed farms, you know, so there's lots of opportunity for every system in contract farming.
Mm. Okay. We talk a lot across the industry and the farming press and in conversations about getting young people and new entrants into the industry to get a foot on the farming ladder. Do you think, I mean, with everything we've talked about, it sounds as if that contract farming should play a greater role with that. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And if a farmer finds a contractor that's motivated and keen and they're really impressed, but potentially they've got a limited capital, you know, the farmer, you know, the agreement can be adjusted where the farmer does actually provide machinery and cows, you know, but his stake in the arrangement is higher to reflect that, you know. So it is still an option for those that are new entrants and don't necessarily have all of the capital available.
Yeah, if it still feels as if this is, you know, if you look at New Zealand, this is obviously really commonplace, isn't it? And it still feels as if it's, I wouldn't say unusual. I guess it's fairly common in dairy farming, but it still feels as if it's, I don't know, it's not as big as it is in some other countries. Why do you think that is?
I think there's just a lack of understanding. I think people don't understand how it works. Mm. It can be, you know, it's actually really simple when you get your head around it, but, you know, it does sound rather complicated to start with. You know, there's various transactions from one business to another, a bank account, you know, and it I think that's why. And I think the other thing is people don't really realise the benefits of it or that it's even an option.
Mm. Yeah. Okay. Andrew, last question to you then. Would you, I think we know the answer to this, but would you recommend contracting farming to others? And what advice would you give to anyone considering contract farming? Is there anything that you'd do differently, I guess, in hindsight, now you've done it for a while?
I don't think I'd do anything differently. The only thing I would say is that I think 5 years is the minimum. I personally wouldn't do a contract farming agreement for much longer than 5 years, just on the basis that in the 5 years that we've been doing it, an awful lot's happened. The single farm payments virtually disappearing. The milk price was it 30p around there? It's at 40 now. 5 years is long enough. A lot happens in 5 years. You can always have a 10-year agreement and have a review at 5 years. So on that one, I think that's, you know, a 5 year is an adequate length. I think it's fair for the contractor as well. I'd recommend it. I can't believe that other people don't do it. There's an awful lot of land rented out in our area, and they'd be very suitable to do on the contract farm. And I think as Tilly's pointed out, I think there's a perception that it's probably a bit complicated and finding people is difficult. I don't think it is. I think there are plenty of people out there. I interview other people. They're all good farmers. I just chose the ones that we went with in the end. But there are plenty of good, there's lots of good farmers out there, some really good farmers. So I don't think it's difficult. I think it's a good, For my situation, it worked really well, and I thoroughly recommend it for anybody too. We've got quite a few of our friends who have started to do that. You hardly ever see any farms for sale in Cheshire, so that tells me there's an awful lot of farms and land available for this sort of a thing. And for a young entrant, it's a wonderful way of getting into farming without, you know, having to buy a farm. Who can buy a farm if you're a young entrant? It's very difficult, isn't it? So to have a contract farming agreement. And as Tilly also pointed out, you can tailor your agreement accordingly. In our agreement, our contract partner provides the cows. We lease the cows off him. They provide all the labour and all the machinery. But, I mean, every farm can be different. It doesn't have to be like that. You just have a greater share of the profit. But, you know, to me, it's a wonderful way of getting into farming without having to spend a couple of million to buy a dairy farm.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, that's all we have time for today. But a very big thank you to our guests, Andrew Jones, Tilly Williams, Chris Walkland, and podcast producer Becky.
Yes, thank you very much for listening. Please see the show notes for more information, including our podcast disclaimer. We'll be back with you next week. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us here.